You may know of the Roman Empire, and maybe even the Republic, mostly because of Julius Caesar, but not many people know about the Roman Kingdom that predated both of these. I myself studied Rome in university and knew very little about the Roman Kingdom prior to researching this episode, obviously. I knew the story of Romulus and Remus founding the city of Rome, but that's about it. And there's a lot more to know. I'm Laura Taylor, and this is Andrew Hook here with me.
Hello!
Welcome to Digging Deeper with the Ancients. This episode is the first of three planned episodes on ancient Rome, which is defined as the founding of the city of Rome in the 8th century BC until the fall of the Western Roman Empire in the 5th century AD. So in three podcasts, we're going to cover about 1,100 years. The Roman civilization has contributed to modern language, religion, society, technology, law, politics, government, warfare, art, literature, architecture, and engineering. So it's covered pretty much everything. It's contributed to everything we do in modern times.
Plumbing, irrigation.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, tell me someone who...
Digging wells, which is really how we find everything else.
Yeah. I don't know of anyone who hasn't heard of something that's Roman, even if they don't know it is.
Heck, there's Lego sets about ancient Rome now. So.
Yes. Rome professionalized and expanded its military and created a system of government called Res Publica, which is the inspiration for modern Commonwealth nations such as us here in Canada. Well, at least for now. People spend their entire lives studying small aspects of ancient Rome. So obviously, I can't do it justice in just three episodes, but I will give an overview, and then in the future, we can come back to revisit and learn more about topics from this series. So please let us know if there's anything you'd like to hear more about. I'm a big fan of ancient Rome, so I'll gladly cover this more, but without your feedback, I just don't know what to cover and feel I shouldn't stick too long in one location. Otherwise, I would do everything on things I already knew a lot about.
And just so there's a couple places where you can get a hold of us right away, but this now instead of at the end of the podcast, you can email us at diggingdeeperwiththeancients@gmail.com or tweet at us at diggingdeeppod. Those are two quick, easy ways you can kind of get some information to us if there's anything you want to hear.
So for now, I try to move around the world a lot and get a variety of topics, because I don't know what you want to hear. If you want to hear anything specific, let us know. So for this first episode, I will cover the time period from the founding of the city of Rome until the Roman Kingdom was replaced by the Republic, roughly 753 to 509 BC. It's about 250 years. Now this is the shortest time period of the three. The next two episodes will be the Republic and then the Empire. Rome must be considered one of the most successful imperial powers in history, with an estimated 50 to 90 million inhabitants, roughly 20% of the world's population at its height in 117 AD. It also covered around 5 million square kilometers, or 1.9 million square miles at that time. That's huge.
Yes.
I'll find a map to put up on the site. Well, it's...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's really not the same unless you see just how much... In the course of centuries, Rome grew from a small town on the Tiber River in central Italy into a vast empire that ultimately embraced England, all of continental Europe, west of the Rhine, and south of the Danube, most of Asia west of the Euphrates, northern Africa, and the islands of the Mediterranean. It is often grouped into classical antiquity together with ancient Greece, and their similar cultures and societies are known as the Greco-Roman world. Unlike the Greeks, who excelled in intellectual and artistic endeavors, the Romans achieved greatness in their military, political, and social institutions. The archaeological evidence of human occupation in the area of modern-day city of Rome dates from about 14,000 years ago, but little is known about that far back. When an area is continually occupied for thousands of years, like the city of Rome, it makes it very difficult to learn about the earliest inhabitants. Basically, all we know is that they were there. The written and oral history of Rome starts a few hundred years later, with origin stories and myths. That makes sense that we wouldn't know much about the very earliest people there, since you move someplace, you get rid of the existing stuff. Mm-hmm. You're not going to just...
It's like when you move into a new apartment. If there's anything in the apartment that you don't want, you get rid of it, and then you put your own stuff in there.
Yeah. When it's been continual habitation, it's hard to learn about the earliest. Origin stories and myths. The origin stories of Rome can be a little confusing, and many include bits and pieces of others, with numerous mythological figures from Romulus and Remus to the Greek heroes Aeneas and Odysseus. There's even a witch or a minor Greek goddess named Circe in some of them.
Circe from Game of Thrones?
No, oh. But that's probably where she got her name.
Oh, okay. Or Circe from the Eternals?
No, oh. But that's probably where she got her name. Although Circe in the Eternals was technically named earlier, so this Circe probably got her name from Circe in the Eternals.
Or maybe she is that Circe from the Eternals.
Maybe, but this Circe has supposedly had a kid.
Well,
so
maybe she adopted someone. I don't know. I wasn't there. You can't say robots can't have kids because of that TV show Raised by Wolves.
That's true.
She had a kid.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. See?
Not a human kid, though.
Spoiler alert, by the way, Cersei's a robot.
Probably a good step there.
A little late on the spoiler, but yeah. Whatever.
Although also with the Raised by Wolves. Both the fact she has a kid and that's not human. So the first origin story I'm going to talk about for the founding of Rome is Romulus and Remus.
From Star Trek?
No.
Oh.
They probably got it from this.
That's possible, I guess.
Because this is a little bit older. Sorry to disappoint. It is the most well-known founding myth of Rome, with most origin stories including the brothers in some way. This story was a Roman adaptation of a widespread ancient Mediterranean folk tale told of many national leaders, such as the Akkadian king Sargon in 2300 BC, the biblical Moses, and the Persian king Cyrus the Great. According to the legend, Romulus and Remus were the sons of Rhea Silvia, the daughter of King Numitor of the nearby city of Alba Longa. Before the birth of the twins, Numitor was deposed by his younger brother, Amulius, who forced his daughter to become a Vestal Virgin so that she would not give birth to rival claimants to his title. However, Rhea was impregnated by the war god Mars, and gave birth to Romulus and Remus. Amulius ordered the infants drowned, like so many mythological heroes. But either they survived and washed ashore, or the servants ordered to kill them took pity on them and abandoned them near the river, instead of trying to drown them. The twins were found and nurtured by a female wolf, until a shepherd named Faustulus found them. Faustulus and his wife raised the children, and upon learning their true identity, they attacked Alba Longa, killed the wicked Amulius, and restored their grandfather to the throne. The twins then decided to found a town on the site where they had been saved as infants. Unfortunately, they soon became involved in a petty quarrel, and Remus was slain by his brother. Romulus then became ruler of the settlement, which was named Rome after him. In order to attract people to the city, Rome became a sanctuary for indigent, exiled, and unwanted people. However, this caused a problem in that Rome came to have large male population, but lacked women. Romulus visited neighboring towns and tribes and attempted to secure marriage rights, but as Rome was so full of undesirables, he was refused. Romulus invited the neighboring Sabines to a festival and then abducted their women. A war then ensued, but the Sabine women intervened to prevent the Sabine men from seizing Rome. A peace treaty was drawn up and the communities merged under the joint rule of Romulus and the Sabine king. Of course, the Sabine's king's early death, perhaps by Romulus, left the Roman as the sole king again.
He's kind of ruthless.
Kind of, yeah. And again.
But he is surrounded by undesirables.
Now, the next origin story is Greek origins. So these stories basically expand on the Romulus and Remus myth because it was popular among the Roman people, but they expand it so that they include Greek origins as well, so that they try to make everybody happy. Mm. Although Greek historians did not write seriously about Rome until late in the Republic, they were aware of Rome's existence long before that. In accordance with their custom of explaining the origin of foreign peoples they encountered by connecting them with wanderings of one of their own mythical heroes, such as Jason and the Argonauts, Heracles, or Hercules for the Romans, Greek writers from the 5th century BC onward invented at least 25 different myths to account for Rome's foundation. In one of the earliest accounts which became accepted, the Trojan hero Aeneas and some followers escaped the Greek destruction of Troy, and after wandering about the Mediterranean for some years, they settled in central Italy, where they intermarried with the native population and became the Latins, which were the Romans. Many writers use this origin story as the basis of their own. Over time, that has included Dionysus of Halicarnassus, and some other well-known writers that I don't think I've talked much about, including Strabo, Ovid, which I have talked about in the Greek mythology a bit, and even Virgil, who wrote under the direction of Emperor Augustus. Side note, he claims to be the descendant of Aeneas. Although it's important to note that the original inspiration was likely a passage in Homer's Iliad that tells of how Aeneas and his descendants would rule the Trojans. But since there was no record of any such dynasty in Troy, scholars propose that Aeneas and his followers relocated and founded Rome. And I have talked about Homer a bit as well.
Yeah, you have a Simpsons reference every episode.
This is the ancient Greek writer who's most famous for writing the Iliad and the Odyssey. Yeah. Yes. And Homer Simpson is named after him.
Or is it the other way around?
No, I'm pretty sure time-wise It makes more sense to say.
Well, if you go with a linear timeline.
What other timeline do you suggest?
I don't know. I'm just saying if you go that way.
Well, that's the way I'm going.
All right, then.
The Greek origins version starts 60 years before the Trojan War, with a Greek from the colony of Arcadia named Evander bringing a group of fellow Arcadians to the area along the Tiber that becomes the city of Rome. In the years that follow, other groups come to settle in the area, including people from various Greek tribes. Hercules and his army, and even the Greek hero Odysseus in some versions. The stories and people that arrive may vary a lot, but they all include Prince Aeneas of Troy, bringing the Trojans that survived the war. The groups eventually unite, and Romulus and Remus are descendants of these original settlers. Some versions have Evander found a city there prior to Rome, others have Aeneas directly found Rome. It can vary considerably and get very confusing reading through the various versions. It's all basically the same story. I also have to admit that I don't understand why some chose to include Odysseus, since he was fighting against the Trojans in the war. Maybe he was just a really popular character at the time, and they wanted to throw him in everything, you know, kind of like...
It was a really popular book, so they put it everywhere.
Well, I was thinking kind of like, you know, vampires were a few years ago. That's the only reason I can think that makes sense. But who knows if they even wanted to make sense. Anyways... The Trojan portion of the story is told in great detail by many historians, and this is how it goes. Aeneas flees the burning city of Troy, leading a group of Trojan survivors on a sea voyage to find a new home. After a long time in rough seas and many adventures along the way, they landed on the banks of the Tiber River. Not long after they landed, the men wanted to take to the sea again. But the women who were traveling with them did not want to leave. One woman, named Roma, suggested that they burn the ships out at sea to prevent their leaving. At first, the men were angry with Roma, but they soon realized that they were in the ideal place to settle. They named the settlement after the woman responsible for torching their ships.
As you do.
Yeah, that sounds completely reasonable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a cute story, but yeah, it's not how I can picture people reacting. Virgil's version also includes Aeneas fighting another suitor to marry a local princess, Lavinia. According to the poem, the Alban kings were descended from Aeneas, and thus Romulus, the founder of Rome, was his descendant. And then Virgil also has Augustus and Julius Caesar as descendants of all of these guys.
Right.
Now, the third major founding story. So we have the one with just Romulus and Remus. Mm. And now we have the one that includes Greek origins, whether it's Aeneas coming from directly from Troy or other Greeks coming long before him. Now there's the third one that is about Romos, who is the son of Odysseus and Circe. So this story tells of how Romos, a son of Odysseus and Circe, was the one who founded Rome. It is speculated that this is a very old origin story, and the name of Romos, which was Greek, was changed by the Romans to the name Romulus. But the name Romos was never forgotten by the people. Instead, it was changed to Remus. And so, these two names came to stand side by side as founders of the city. Another Greek historian who includes Odysseus and Circe in his origin myths has them have three sons, Romos, Antaeus, and Artaeus, who each found their own city. There's a couple that involve Odysseus and Circe having Romos, but it's hard to find information about those stories because they're not as widely...
Because she was a robot.
They're not as widely known. So the naming... Solinus, a Roman writer who also wrote a book about the seven wonders of the ancient world, which we have podcasts about. If you haven't heard them, go listen to them. He compiled multiple stories to form a timeline of the founding of Rome and mentions that there are different stories of why it is named Rome. One version is that when Evander and his people came, there was already a small town built, and the youth called it in Latin Valentia, and he called it in Greek, Rome. Another writer says that it was named after the granddaughter of Aeneas. Then, of course, there are the previously mentioned stories of the name being derived from Romulus, Romas, or Roma, or even the fact that the Greek version of the word Rome means strength or vigor. It also could just be derived from the Etruscan word Rumon, meaning river, and the Etruscans were a group that lived very close by. No matter who founded it, though, the ancient Romans were certain of one thing. The day Rome was founded, April 21st, the day of the festival sacred to Pallas, goddess of shepherds. On this date, they celebrated the Par Ilia. However, what they didn't know, or they were at least uncertain of, was the exact year the city had been founded. This is one reason why they preferred to date their years by the presiding councils. Several dates have been proposed by the ancient authorities, and in general, it's come to be accepted as 753 BC as the founding date for Rome. But some of the previous ones, they based it on the timing of the Olympiads in Greece, because most of them were Greece coming over, Greece writing about Rome. So one says it was the 38th year prior to the first Olympiad, or 814 BC. Another writes that it was the first year of the 8th Olympiad, 748 BC, the fourth year of the 12th Olympiad, 729 BC. So there's so many different dates. They all range around the middle of the 8th century BC.
Mm. But you said April the 21st.
Yes, April the 21st.
This podcast will be coming out about a week before the birthday of
City of Rome. Now, what does the actual archaeology say? We've been through the myths. I did mention that there have been people there since 14,000 years ago. Now, the archaeological evidence for early Rome is scattered and limited because it has proven difficult to conduct extensive excavations at sites still occupied by later buildings. Mm-hmm. What evidence exists is often ambiguous and cannot be correlated easily to the ancient literary tradition. It can, however, sometimes confirm or contradict aspects of the ancient historical account. For example, it confirms that the earliest settlement was a simple village of thatched huts on Rome's Palatine Hill, which is one of the seven hills that modern Rome eventually took up. But it dates the beginning of the village to the 10th or 9th century BC, not the mid-8th century. Rome, therefore, cannot have been ruled by a succession of only seven kings down to the end of the 6th century BC, like pretty much all Roman historians describe. Although, since that is the only history we have, that is what I will be talking about as well. Discoveries on the Palatine Hill have also yielded evidence of a series of fortification walls on the north slope that can be dated to the middle of the 8th century BC. So this is when it's suggested as the start of the city of Rome, is when the fortification walls went up. According to the legend, Romulus plowed a furrow around the hill in order to mark the boundary of his new city. Several excavations support the view that Rome grew from pastoral settlements on Palatine Hill built above the area of the future Roman Forum. The city developed gradually through the aggregation of several villages around the largest one on the Palatine. This aggregation was made possible by the increase in agricultural productivity, which in turn boosted the development of trade with the Greek colonies of southern Italy. All these events, according to archaeological excavations, occurred around the mid-8th century BC, can be considered as the origin of the city. Difference in pottery and burial techniques attests to Rome being settled by farmers from various regions, which is similar to a lot of the origin stories that include a wide variety of people. So they may have exaggerated and made up names and stuff for origin stories.
What?
But there is archaeological evidence to support it. Support some of the claims, at least. The Roman kingdom was the earliest period of Roman history when the city and its territory were ruled by kings. According to oral accounts, the Roman kingdom began with the city's founding in 753 BC, with settlements around the Palatine Hill along the River Tiber in central Italy, and ended with the overthrow of the kings and the establishment of the Republic in 509 BC. Little is certain about the kingdom's history, as no records and few inscriptions from the time of the kings survive. The accounts of this period, written during the Republic and the Empire, are thought to be largely based on oral tradition. Roman tradition and archaeological evidence point to a complex within the Roman Forum as the seat of power for the king and the religious center as well. The traditional version of Roman history recounts that a series of seven kings ruled the settlement in Rome's first centuries. The traditional chronology allows 243 years for their combined reigns, an average of almost 35 years, which is actually pretty long. I mean, don't tell our modern monarchs about that.
Considering most people didn't live much past 30.
Yeah, exactly. Since the Gauls destroyed many of Rome's historical records when they sacked the city in 390 BC, and what remained eventually fell prey to time or to theft, no contemporary records of the kingdom survived. which means all accounts of the Roman kings must be carefully questioned. The king was the supreme military executive and judicial authority. He possessed ultimate executive power and unchecked military authority as the commander-in-chief of all of the Roman legions. The king also had the power to either appoint or nominate all officials to office. He even received the right to be the only person to appoint people to the Senate. As far as his religious powers, what is known for certain is that the king alone possessed the right to the interpretation of omens on behalf of Rome, and no public business could be performed without the will of the gods made known. The people knew the king as a mediator between them and the gods, and thus viewed the king with religious awe. This made the king the head of the national religion and its chief executive. Having the power to control the Roman calendar, he conducted all religious ceremonies and appointed lower religious offices and officers. So basically, the king controlled everything. You couldn't make a business decision without consulting the gods, and the king was the one
who could talk to the gods.
Who interpreted what the gods were telling you. Under the kings, the Senate and Curiate Assembly, which were two governing bodies, had very little power and authority. They were not independent, since they lacked the right to meet together and discuss questions of state at their own will. They could be called together only by the king and could discuss only the matters the king laid before them. The only thing that the king could not do without the approval of the Senate and the Curiate Assembly was to declare war against a foreign nation. But there was also probably ways around that, since he could control everything else, right?
The gods told me to.
Yeah, exactly, something like that.
The mostly king, Mars.
Well, that was it. That would be his ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least the first king.
Mars told me to declare war.
That was his father, the first king. Romulus, his father was supposedly... Depends on the original founding myth. Romulus and Remus were the sons of the god Mars. The king was also judge, jury, and executioner in regards to the law. Although he probably didn't actually execute anyone. That would be below a king's role, but you get the idea. The electoral process in the kingdom. Whenever a king died, Rome entered a period where the supreme power of the state would devolve to the Senate. Senate was a group of people that the king appointed their positions and nobility. The Senate was also responsible for finding a new king. They would nominate someone, and the people had the option to either accept or reject the person. In theory, the people of Rome elected their leader. But the Senate had most control over the process, and they normally suggested someone from among their ranks. So theoretically, it was also a democracy, I guess you could say. It was a
democracy where one vote doesn't necessarily count.
Yeah. So just a little bit more about the Senate. According to legend, Romulus established the Senate after he founded Rome by personally selecting the most noble men, which would be wealthy men with legitimate wives and children. You had to have a wife.
But still undesirable.
But yes, you had to have a wife and children to serve as a council for the city. As such, the Senate was the king's advisory council. The Senate was composed of 300 senators, with 100 representing each of the three ancient tribes of Rome. The Latins, the Sabines, and the Etruscans. Under the monarchy, the Senate possessed very little power and authority, as the king held most of the political power of the state and could exercise those powers without the Senate's consent. The kings, excluding Romulus, who according to legend held office by virtue of being the city's founder, were all elected by the people of Rome to serve for life, with none of the kings relying on military force to gain or keep the throne. Now, that is kind of interesting, because we've talked about others, like in the Khmer in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about fighting and infighting and everything to get to be king. And a lot of places, it is all about power. And even later in Roman, in Roman times. Again, it was all about war. But at this time, supposedly, they were picked by the Senate and the people voted for them. Yes.
I just did air quotes.
Voted for them. So Romulus, from 753 to 716 BC, was when he reigned for 37 years. Now, he was the founder of Rome, but most likely the invention of later ancient historians. His fictitious reign was filled with deeds expected of an ancient city founder and the son of a war god. Thus, he was described as having established Rome's early political, military, and social institutions, and as having waged war against neighboring states. Romulus was also thought to have shared his royal power for a time with a Sabine named Titus Tatius. Now, the name may be that of an authentic ruler of early Rome, perhaps Rome's real first king. However, nothing was known about him in later centuries, and his reign was therefore lumped together with that of Romulus. According to legend, Romulus vanished at age 54. He was reported to have been taken up to Mount Olympus in a whirlwind and made a god. After initial acceptance by the public, rumors of foul play by the elite began to grow. In particular, some thought that members of the nobility had murdered him, dismembered his body, and buried the pieces on their land. It was very specific, considering it's just all rumors. Mm-hmm. And this has been passed down thousands of years. What? The nobility try to get someone out of the way? Now, these rumors were set aside after an esteemed nobleman testified that Romulus had come to him in a vision and told him that he was the god Quirinius. He became not only one of the three major gods of Rome, but the very likeness of the city itself. A replica of Romulus's hut was maintained in the center of Rome until the end of the Roman Empire. The names of the six kings that followed Romulus are authentic and were remembered by the Romans, but few reliable details were known about their reigns. However, since the later Romans wished to have explanations for their early customs and institutions, historians have ascribed various innovations to these kings, often in stereotypical or erroneous ways. The three kings after Romulus are still hardly more than names, but the recorded deeds of the last three kings are more historical and can, to some extent, be checked by archaeological evidence. So the second king of Rome was Numa Pompilius. He reigned from 715 to 672 BC for 43 years. Now, he got power because the people started pushing the Senate to name a new king after they put it off for about a year.
That's a good mourning period.
Hmm? Well, the thing is, in that time, the senators had power, all the power. Okay. Whereas
they were mourning.
Yes. Whereas as soon as they pick a king, they lose all their power, right? Numa was a Sabine, known for his justice and piety. His reign was marked by peace and religious reform. He established many of Rome's most important religious and political institutions, introduced the 12-month solar calendar, and began Rome's building projects with his royal palace, the Regia, and the complex of the Vestal Virgins. The next king was Tullus Hostilius, from 672 to 640 BC. So he reigned for 32 years. And just like his name, Hostilius, he was warlike and completely unlike his predecessor. He defeated and destroyed the neighboring city of Alba Longa and integrated the noble Alban families into the Roman aristocracy. He's attributed to constructing the home of the Senate, which lasted 562 years after his death. So that's impressive, if he's actually the one who did it. He is said to have neglected the worship of the gods until towards the end of his reign. He fell ill and became superstitious. However, when Tullus called upon Jupiter and begged assistance, Jupiter responded with a bolt of lightning that burned the king and his house to ashes. Don't ignore the gods. The next king was Ancus Marcius, from 640 to 616 BC. He reigned for 25 years. And he was Numa, so the second king's grandson. Also peaceful and religious, he only fought wars in defense. He built Rome's first prison, his first bridge across the river Tiber, and the first aqueduct. He, like his grandfather, died peacefully. So the peaceful ones died peacefully too. The next king was Lucius Tarquinius Priscus from 616 to 578 BC. So he reigned for 38 years. Now he was the first king of Etruscan birth. He was also adopted by the previous king. So the fourth king adopted the fifth king.
But before he became king.
Yes. Yes. Now this king was killed by the biological son of his adopted father.
Makes sense.
Yeah, his adopted brother killed him.
Jealousy?
Yeah, probably. He's known for waging wars against the neighboring Sabines and Etruscans, although he also did double the membership of the Senate to include the conquered Etruscans. He used the treasures Rome had acquired from the conquest to build great monuments, including great sewer systems, and he drained the swamp-like area that was between the Seven Hills of Rome. I don't know if you've ever heard, but it said that Rome was built on a swamp, and it was. So this he's attributed to draining the swamp.
So it's
and,
a lot like Washington, D.C., so that when they had to drain the swamp.
Yep.
At least that's what and, every president says that they're going to do, and then they don't.
And then the Roman Forum. He founded the Roman Games and built the Circus Maximus, which is a giant stadium for chariot races. This is kind of neat because I actually got to see the outline of where the Circus Maximus was when I was in Rome back, what, 21 years ago? Oh my God, that's scary. So you could still visit the site. There's no kind of construction materials there anymore. But back in 2001, you could still visit the site. There's a giant ring in the grass, basically it. But still, it was neat to know that it was built this long ago. The next king was Servius Tullus, who reigned from 578 to 534 BC, 44 years. Now he is the son-in-law of the previous king. He married the daughter of the previous king. He's the son-in-law. So there's a lot of family connections here. Mm-hmm. Even though you didn't get in by...
Well, he's not related by blood. He just happened to marry into it.
Yes, but... And that's historically what you think of a monarchy is blood relations, yeah. Right? And, I mean, later the Roman Empire... This is more like what the Roman Empire was. Where you didn't... It wasn't necessarily blood birth... But blood relations, sorry. But some sort of familial tie is typically how they got to where they were. They got to rule. Now, Servius Tullius was the son of a slave. He fought successful wars against the Etruscans and built the first wall around the Seven Hills of Rome. He reorganized the army, instituted Rome's first census, which would divide the population into the five economic classes. He also gave voting rights based on socioeconomic status, favoring the elites. However, closer to the end of his reign, he favored the poor in order to gain their support because there were a lot more of them. He was killed in a conspiracy by his daughter and her husband, who then became the next king. The seventh and final king was Lucius Tarquinius Superbus. Yep. 534 to 509 BC. He ruled for 25 years. So, he is the son of the fifth king and the son-in-law of the sixth, whom he and his wife killed. He waged numerous wars, conquered various Latin cities, and established colonies. He secured Rome's position as the head of the Latin cities. He is remembered for his use of violence and intimidation to control Rome, and his disrespect for Roman custom and the Roman Senate. Tensions came to a head when the king's son, I'm not going to pronounce that name, something Tarquinius, He raped Lucretia, wife and daughter of some powerful Roman nobles. Lucretia told her relatives about the attack and committed suicide to avoid the dishonor of the episode. A group of noblemen then incited a revolution that deposed and expelled Tarquinius and his family from Rome in 509 BC. This king was viewed so negatively that the word for king, which is rex, held a negative connotation in Latin language until the fall of the Roman Empire. Two of the men that led the revolt became Rome's first consuls, marking the beginning of the Roman Republic. Now, the last three kings were great city planners and organizers, as has been confirmed by archaeology. Their Etruscan origin is rendered plausible by Rome's geographic location, growing geographic significance, as well as by the public works they carried out being so similar to Etruscan cities of the era. So there is some archaeological evidence supporting those last three kings. Now for my Simpsons reference. So there's one Simpsons episode all about ancient Rome. I'll be referencing this for the next three episodes. It's titled I, Columbus, and is the second episode of the 32nd season. It originally aired on October 4th, 2020. Now, in this episode, the family is visiting the Springfield History Museum's Ancient Rome Gallery, where Marge and Homer have an argument over him participating in a management position training program, with Marge wanting Homer to put more effort in. When the museum curator hears their story, he proposes them the story of the life of Obesius the Wide. So it's a generic ancient Rome reference, although the name Obesius may also be a play on the Greek hero Odysseus, who also plays a role in Rome's founding myths. So, But there's nothing specific to the kingdom in this episode. There are also Funko Pops of the characters from this episode. So the Simpsons in Roman gear. Hint, hint. I want these.
We'll make a wish list and put it on Amazon.
So, I do have another one, though.
Okay.
Another episode is the one that features Odysseus and Circe. And this I actually referenced in Greek mythology episode. It's called Tales from the Public Domain, the 14th episode of season 13. It originally aired in March 2002. The episode is split into three stories, with the first being Doe Brother, Where Art Thou? And it follows Odysseus, depicted as Homer, trying to get home to his wife and son after the Trojan War. And one of the people he comes across is Circe. Now, I dug into your part just a little bit,
okay.
Your pop culture reference. I have a little one because I know Remus is very hard to find references to. So I have just a tiny little one. Remus Lupin from Harry Potter.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, it's not a common name.
No.
So, I'm sure that's probably where it comes from.
Probably.
Anyways, I'm done now.
Okay. So, now, my references are going to be very, very heavy Star Trek influenced this week. Because...
Why is that?
Well, in Star Trek, just in case you didn't know, there's a couple planets. One of them is called Romulus. The other one is called Remus. Both in the same system. They're almost like brother planets. And one of them enslaves the other one. So, anyways, we'll get into that.
Let me guess. People from Romulus kill off the people from Remus.
No, they enslave
them. Okay.
It's actually the Remans that actually almost take over and destroy the Romulans.
Oh,
but that's so different. That's Star Trek Nemesis. So.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, the references for Romulus the planet... Star Trek Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 12, Babel 1. Star Trek Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 13. United, Star Trek Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 14, The Einar. So, three episodes in a row that involve the planet Romulus. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Inter Armana Emin Silent Legis. Season 7, Episode 16. That's from 1999. The Enterprise ones were from 2005. Star Trek, The Next Generation. The Defector, Season 3, Episode 10. And Unification Parts 1 and 2, Season 5, Episodes 7 and 8. Star Trek Lower Decks. Veritas, Season 1, Episode 8, in 2020. I mentioned earlier Star Trek Nemesis, that came out in 2002. And Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams version, 2009. Romulus plays a big part in that because Romulus gets destroyed. References of Romulans themselves in Star Trek. There's a lot more of those than just
the planet. Yes, instead of just the...
They're actually in 78 episodes. I'm not going to list each episode, but just how many are in each series. So, like, for instance, there's three in the original series. Most notably, The Balance of Terror, which is where you first meet the Romulans in chronological... Well, not chronological, Enterprise. Anyways.
Our chronological order.
Yes, when it came out first. That's the first timeline that we've seen the Romulans. There was two original series movies, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Romulans are in those movies. Three episodes of the animated series have Romulans in them. 21 episodes of The Next Generation. Two Next Generation movies, Star Trek Generations, is a big part of that. It's not a big part of that. It's actually only a corpse. There's only a Romulan corpse.
Ah.
16 episodes of Deep Space Nine. 6 episodes of Voyager. I didn't think there'd be that many, being that they are in the
Delta Quadrant.
The other side of the galaxy.
They're way far away.
1 episode of Lower Decks, the one I mentioned earlier. 3 episodes of Discovery. And 15 episodes of Picard so far.
Yeah, I was going to say the last one did too. He talked about that her aunt, like she, yes. Laris yeah. was a Romulan.
But you don't see any Romulans.
No, but he does
see. Actually, you don't. You do. You see Evan Angoria's character, the kid who died. You see Raffi. Anyways, long story short, Picard has a lot about Romulans.
Yeah, there's some main Romulan characters.
Yes. Remus, however, there's only the only appearance of them in movies or any Star Trek at all is Star Trek Nemesis. That's the only time you actually see the planet or even have the planet mentioned.
So that's where the whole history and the slave and, you know, stuff like that, that's where it all is just in that movie?
Yes.
Huh.
But remains have also appeared in Star Trek Enterprise, the United and the Anar. So you've seen Remans in those two episodes of Enterprise. The Remans were a slave-like species to the Romulans who worked in the dilithium mines on Remus. Now, there's a bunch of non-canon appearances of Romulans as well, including mostly video games. Star Trek Online in 2010, The Borg War, Machinima. It's a Machinima. It's okay. It's a cartoon based on video games. That's what Machinima is?
Yeah.
And so the Borg War in 2006, because they just used a whole bunch of different Star Trek video games to make an animated show. Star Trek Hidden Evil in 99, Star Trek Armada 2 in 2001, Star Trek Starfleet Command 3 in 2002, Star Trek Away Team in 2001, Star Trek New Worlds in 1999, Star Trek Tactical Assault in 2006, and an online show called Star Trek Continues, To Boldly Go, Parts 1 and 2. So, that's my Star Trek references. They're out of the way. Now, Romulus and Remus in movies and in TV. Romulo e Romo in 1961. The First King, Birth of an Empire in 2019.
Oh, that's
Romulus recent. In 2020. That's pretty much it. Those are the Romulus and Remus ones. Now, movies that are kind of based around that myth. Mowgli, The Legend of the Jungle. Yep,
the
Jungle Book. In both 1967 and 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Tarzan, 1999 and 2013. Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan in 1984. Yeah, yes, I know he was raised by gorillas.
But similar.
He's raised by...
Yeah, he's abandoned by the humans and raised by...
In that case, George of the Jungle, 1997. Brendan Fraser,
yep.
Canadian icon.
You got to get that Brendan Fraser reference in, huh?
And there's tons of Tarzan movies.
Yeah, so as far as the stretching a little bit and being raised just by animals instead of people. Yeah.
The HBO show Raised by Wolves.
Yeah, good point. That's which we've already talked about briefly.
Now this one might be a bit of a stretch. Jumanji. As a kid, he was taken away and raised in the jungle.
Yeah, but he wasn't necessarily raised by anything.
We don't know who
specifically.
He was raised by.
Yeah, true.
There's a Japanese animation, Princess Mononoke. She was raised by wolves. Okay. Raised by a wolf.
Okay.
How to Train Your Dragon 2, Valka, was raised by a dragon. Or a dragon was raised by a human. Anyway, it's something not raised by their own species.
Yeah, I believe it was she raised the dragons from.
Now, here's another stretch. Batman Returns in 1992. Oswald Cobblepot raised by penguins.
Okay, that's actually not bad. That'll...
Now, Trojan movies. Because, well, Trojan
is a big part of the
origin.
Yes, there was a big part of the origin stories.
Troy, 2004. Alexander, 2004. Troy, Fall of a City, 2018. That's a TV movie. Mr. Peabody and Sherman, a cartoon. Or it's an animated movie, but in 2014. They apparently go back in time to the Trojan Wars. I haven't seen it. I'm just going by what it says. The Legend of Awesomus Maximus. It's one of those farce movies. It's a comedy of a whole bunch of like the Troy movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That came out in 2011. Odysseia in 1968. The Trojan Women in 1971. The Avenger, 1962. Fury of Achilles in 1962. Magikos Kathifikis, Magikos Kathreftis in 2016. Hercules and the Princess of Troy in 1965. Broken Circle in 2022. So it came out this year. Helen of Troy in 1924. The Hunt for Troy in 2007. And Xena, Warrior Princess, Beware Greeks Bearing Gifts in 1996.
Now, some of those are a bit of a stretch to actually be referencing. Kind of like I looked into video games, and there's really nothing around the Roman kingdom or Romulus and Remus. There's tons of, especially Roman Republic in video games. There's lots of gladiators in movies and video games, but there's nothing. I couldn't find anything for the kingdom, so we won't go into that. Now, because, most of the main ones that we've talked about for other podcasts, like Civilization and stuff like that, it's the Roman Empire or sometimes the Republic for some of the games, but
not the kingdom.
Not the kingdom, which makes sense because there isn't a lot known about it. Mm-hmm. What we do know isn't necessarily fact.
Right.
So, yes. But... yeah, that's it for the origins of Rome and the kingdom period podcast.
And if you want to get a hold of us and give us any comments or anything like that, you can get a hold of us at diggingdeeperwiththeancients@gmail.com, all one word. You can follow us on Instagram at diggingdeeperwiththeancients, once again, all one word. We have a Facebook page at diggingdeeperwiththeancients. And our Twitter is Digging Deep Pod. So go check those out. Follow us. Let us know what you think. And if you have anything that you want to just talk about or have any questions about anything that we've covered or anything that you want us to cover, just let us know.
I just need to add one more thing, is that I am such a Roman nerd that I even named a dog Remus. Not Romulus. I had to go with the lesser-known name, Remus. But the people at the vet clinic pronounced it wrong so many times that I ended up changing his name. Well, he was still a puppy, but still. I named a dog Remus.
All right. That's it. Please like, share, subscribe. Let everyone know about this. It's the only way we can grow as a podcast. And hopefully you're all doing great, especially our listener out in the Ukraine. We're thinking about you. Stay safe and have a great day.
Bye. Bye.